You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you said what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we preview TNA's upcoming Lockdown pay-per-view, as well as discuss, among other things, Brock Lesnar, Daniel Bryan, and the Funkasaurus Brodus Clay. My name is David, and I am joined today by my broadcast partner, Jamie. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, Dave. Coming down from off of WrestleMania's high, only to be hit with lockdown this week. So, very exciting week.
A lot of great wrestling to discuss on today's show. Should we get started?
Let's ring the bell. TNA Impact, Lockdown Preview. Lockdown is this Sunday, live on pay-per-view. When you look at the card, how excited are you?
Well, I think this is a good card, actually. But in general, I don't love shows that kind of feature the same type of match. The Lockdown pay-per-view features steel cage matches, and one or two of those I kind of like. I always like steel cage matches, but I'm not crazy about shows that feature the same match over and over. WWE does this with, like, you know, Extreme Rules. Every match has an Extreme Rules stipulation. What do you think about the fact that we're going to see all these steel cage matches?
Yeah, I think it runs dry after a little bit. I agree with you. It is an important show for TNA. It's kind of their showcase pay-per-view. It is strange that it's all matches are fought in a cage, as you said. It is a little strange. I also agree with you that I think the card is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
When I look at the matches, I think there are some A matches there. Obviously, the main event with Rude and Storm. I think the Hardy Angle feud and match is an A match. The knockouts, Velvet Sky and Gail Kim, I think that's an A match. So I think there are some good matches in there.
No, I agree with you. I think on paper, the card looks good. I like tag team cage matches, so the tag team title match should be a lot of fun. And I agree with you about the knockouts. I like Velvet Sky versus Gail Kim, because we don't see the women usually in those high-impact type matches, right, where you get these kind of stipulations. Like I said, I'm just not crazy about shows that revolve around the same kind of theme matches. I think it takes away a little bit. And the other thing it kind of does, too, Jamie, is it kind of boxes you into the types of finishes you can have with these matches. You can't have every match finish the same, and cage matches can only kind of finish in certain ways. So, I don't know. For me, I'm surprised that Lockdown with these cage matches is like their premier event of the year.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I will say this, though. WWE cage matches versus TNA cage matches, they're two different animals. TNA, I think you will see a lot more high-impact moves. I think you'll see some blood. I think that, you know, they allow them to go a little bit more in the cage matches on TNA as opposed to the WWE. WWE, cage matches are really no more than a glorified regular match when you think about it. I mean, when was the last time you can say you saw a WWE cage match that was high-impact, absolute, you know, you walked away saying, wow, this was just an unbelievable, whether it's with blood or whether it's doing crazy stuff off the top of the cage, you can't really say that you've seen that in WWE very often.
That's actually a good point. Even the criticism of Undertaker, Triple H, Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania 28, they didn't really use the cage, right?
Yeah, not at all. They didn't use the cage at all.
Great match. But hey, listen, one thing also about this pay-per-view I find interesting, I saw on their website, they are having a VIP fan fest this weekend, and it's interesting they're also doing what WWE does, where they have the autograph signings, and that may be nice for fans.
Yeah, that'll be great for all five that show up. The Lockdown event is being held at the Nashville Municipal Auditorium, which seats about 10,000 people. I checked on Ticketmaster, and 8th row floor seats are still available. What does this say about the TNA promotion right now? Dave, you know, when I look at this, and I know I've been very hard on TNA and kind of busting its chops a little bit, But as a privately held corporation with outside investors, isn't their return better invested elsewhere if their current investment is not generating a return? That's what I ask, and I think it is. And I can't imagine that it's only a matter of time until something happens here.
Well, what I would worry about, Jamie, is the fact that this is a roadshow for TNA. You know, they're coming outside of their TNA impact zone in Orlando in an area of the South which is traditionally a pretty strong area for wrestling at the Nashville Municipal Auditorium. How many tickets are left, though? And you say there's eighth row floor tickets. I mean, is it a couple? Do they have a lot of seats left? Could you tell from Ticketmaster?
I went on Ticketmaster and I tried to purchase two tickets.
Okay.
And eighth row floor seats were available. The two tickets cost $146. Okay. If you went to WrestleMania to get eighth row floor seats, mm-hmm. what was that? The gold package or something like that?
Yeah.
A couple thousand dollars. Now, granted, that included the hotel and so forth. But, you know, my point is they're going to lose money on this event. They're going to lose a lot of money on this event. And at some point, something has to give.
Well, you and I have had this discussion before. Their business model, should they be on the road more? Should they be on the road less? Filming everything at the Impact Zone. My concern is I think there's just too many pay-per-views.
Yeah,
well, I like this card. We talk about this card and the matches on it. I'd like to see it, but I'm not going to spend $45 to see it. Now, if there wasn't another show next month, maybe I would, but there's just so many pay-per-views, and with the economy, I don't know. I'm not too overly concerned with the fact there's some eighth-row seats here for this show. I would want to take a look a little deeper at their books to see, you know, how are they doing in Orlando and all their shows. Do you think, I mean, is this indicative of the fact that TNA is just not selling tickets to any of their live events?
It may be. I just don't get it. I mean, it's not like they haven't added some WWE stars like the Jeff Hardys of the world, Gail Kim, you know, even Kurt Angle going back a little ways. So,
but is it WWE stars that you think will bring the people to the arena and buy these tickets, or is it they need to develop their own?
No, I actually think it is the WWE stars. I mean, when you have somebody like a Jeff Hardy, granted he had legal issues and so forth, but Jeff Hardy was a very popular person in the WWE. He goes to TNA, you would think that would generate some interest. Unfortunately, it did for like 2 weeks, but I see that interest waning. It'll be interesting to see if TNA is in business at the end of this year. I question whether it will be. The main event for Lockdown features Tennessee's own James Storm, who will face Bobby Roode for the TNA Heavyweight Championship. This is going to be an interesting match, Dave, and one that I would call an A match on the card. I think Roode is better with the belt than Storm will be.
Mm-hmm.
I think Roode has been a very good heel for TNA. I don't know if Storm has that charisma that Roode has. So when you talk about gimmicks and the belt just being another tool to promote, you know, wrestlers and really another gimmick, I think it's very important for Roode to retain the title. What do you think?
I don't think we'll see any hometown discount here, just because this is a match in Tennessee and, you know, that's great for James Storm. I think it's important for TNA here to keep the belt on Bobby Roode for a couple reasons. I like continuity. I like continuity in champions, and I'd like to see him hold it for a while. I also think, you know, again, we have this show where we have all these steel cage matches, and they just paint you in a corner the types of finishes you can have. So, you know, maybe there's a cheap finish here. I don't know. How do you actually see this match ending? If Bobby Roode retains, is Sting going to get involved? You know, I mean, is there going to be a clean pin? I don't know. I would be more excited about this match if this were the only steel cage match on the show. It just makes me a little concerned that we're going to have steel cage matches up and down the whole card. What they can do for this match that it stands out.
Yeah, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I think that I think it is going to be a clean pinfall.
Okay.
I'll tell you, James Storm, he just looks out of shape. I think he's been drinking too much of that beer.
I don't blame him for that.
Yeah, he just doesn't have, to me, that star power. I think Roode wins by pinfall over Storm in the cage.
So would this then be, in your estimation, the end of this feud, or what happens then moving forward for Bobby Roode?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there are obviously some other great challenges for him out there, whether it be a Jeff Hardy, whether it be a Mr. Anderson. But, you know, James Storm, obviously because they were tag team partners, is an attractive matchup. There's been rumors of James Storm to the WWE for a while. I don't know what his contract situation is, but I don't think this is something that's going to carry on too long after lockdown.
Well, let me ask you this. We look at WrestleMania kind of as the end, or you could say even the beginning of a new season for WWE. Is that the same for lockdown?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, you know, certainly Hardy versus Angle, this is kind of pay-per-view number two for them. I think it is the end, kind of the end of the season, though. When you look at the Team Eric versus Team Garrett matchup, that's kind of come to fruition. This match has come to fruition. Morgan and Crimson has come to fruition. So I think it will kind of be a restart of a new year, and who knows what will happen with that. We always see surprises.
Mm-hmm. World Wrestling Entertainment. Brock Lesnar will face John Cena this month at Extreme Rules. Given that Brock just returned to the WWE, is this too soon? Well, you know, we didn't want another 12 months like we had with The Rock, right?
Yeah, that's the first thing I had when I saw this topic today. You know, we just talked about how Rock Cena was too long. Now we're asking if this is too short.
Now it's Brock Cena, and it's like they can't get to us fast enough. I don't know. I don't want 12 months. I'm excited to see Brock Lesnar back in the ring, but I will say I think this is a little quick. I mean, it feels to me, Jamie, like 5 minutes ago, our whole world revolved around The Rock versus John Cena, and that's almost just gone now. I mean, The Rock is promised to be champion or whatever, but he's gone. They bring somebody new in. Now it's Brock versus John Cena, and we're just changing gears. It's like changing the channel on the television. It's a good match. I don't see a clean finish.
Absolutely not. Yeah, there is no way there is a clean finish in this match. It can't be.
Can't be.
You know, what I see happening, and tell me if you think I'm crazy here, but what if Brock just starts beating up Cena and Rock comes out, kind of saves Cena, and all of a sudden it's Brock, Rock, Cena, and then they can announce that for WrestleMania 29 in a three-way match?
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of cool. I kind of thought that was what was going to happen at SummerSlam, where The Rock made the save, and, you know, they kind of start putting in place what they were going to do at WrestleMania 29 at SummerSlam. Here's the thing. I know they want to make an impact with Brock Lesnar, and it's got my attention. I feel kind of bad for Cena. You and I have talked about this. The interesting thing is people love burying this guy, and they love the fact that The Rock got the better end of him and that Brock's been beating him up. But people fail to realize that if Cena wasn't so good at what he does, none of this would mean anything. Right? I mean, here's an example, Jamie. Rowdy Roddy Piper still to this day claims he's the one who sold WrestleMania 1. Because if there wasn't someone for Hulk Hogan to beat up, nobody would have cared. Right? And so, you know, John Cena can get all the grief he wants. You know, people want to heap on him and dump on him and just bury him. But if you didn't hate Cena, you wouldn't care so much to see who beat him up. So let's give him a little credit here. I'm not dying to see this match just yet. But, I mean, are you dying to see it this quickly?
No, I'm not. You know, what are they going to do next? Are they going to go to Cena's house and kick his dog? I mean, seriously, I feel bad for the guy. The guy's all bloodied up on Monday.
Looked pretty cool. That punch that Brock landed on him, that looked legit, didn't it?
That's serious stuff. I mean, he's coming from an MMA where he's been for the last couple of years, and, boy, he really popped Cena. So, you know, I think we agree on one thing. This will not be a clean finish. It can't be. This was rushed. This is going to be carried out for a little while, and I think it will ultimately lead to something to do with WrestleMania 29.
Are you going
to
get this show?
Of course. I mean, I mean, I have to, right? You know, it's like you said, it has my interest. So yeah, of course I have to get the show, and I know we're not going to talk about it this week, but I think, you know, the Punk Jericho thing has just been taken to a whole different level, and that really intrigues me.
The WWE has worked hard to push Daniel Bryan as a heel the past few weeks. Why not just embrace his popularity and book him accordingly? I'm scratching my head here, Jamie, because you and I were fortunate to be down in Miami and see firsthand how popular Daniel Bryan was. It was almost unbelievable. And in pro wrestling, this doesn't come along every day. I mean, this is very hard for promoters to actually find people that connect like this with the audience. And it is no stretch, correct me if I'm wrong, no stretch to say Daniel Bryan was the most popular guy at Raw and maybe even the most popular guy at WrestleMania this past year. Why book him now to purposely put him off as a heel so strongly as they're doing?
Yeah, the WWE could really screw this up. I think they kind of started screwing up, you know, the Punk thing back before Punk did his little pipe bomb commentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Punk was clearly a heel and the fans were gravitating towards it, and you know, they tried to throw him into Nexus and stuff. They kind of screwed that up. I feel like we're going the same direction with Daniel Bryan.
Hmm.
You know, they removed AJ from him. I didn't understand that. I thought she was a pretty good character in this little storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't get it. It's almost like when McMahon has the world in his hands, he just wants to crumble it up and do his own thing. And maybe that is the case.
Is there any backlash, do you think, because Daniel Bryan comes from the Indies and Ring of Honor, and he has that kind of cult following that, kind of like they always said with McMahon, when he got those WCW stars, he just wanted to make sure everyone knew who the big gorilla here is.
Well, I mean, we've both read tremendous amounts about, you know, wrestling history. We're both wrestling historians, if you will. And we both know that Vince McMahon likes to dish out some of that humble pie.
Yeah.
as soon as somebody thinks they're becoming overly popular. Maybe this is a case of that. He's uh-huh. trying to dish out some humble pie and say, hey, Daniel Bryan, you just remember who brought you here.
But it's interesting because I remember talking to a couple of the divas one time, and what they were saying, Jamie, basically is they know they only have a limited amount of time on television. They've got to do whatever they can to make the most of it, and sometimes they've got to force their way with their storylines. I remember, you know, it was like Michelle and Layla talking about Lay Cool and how they really worked hard to get this through the channels, on the TV, and it was a success for them. I mean, in some ways, I feel bad for Daniel Bryan in the sense that, you know, if he really did work hard to make this a major character and to stand out and, you know, to find some voice in an otherwise crowded locker room, shouldn't we be applauding that? I feel like, to what you just said, the WWE could really kind of go wrong here. And you're not listening to the fans. The fans want this guy to be a superstar.
I agree with you. Hey, I'm a Daniel Bryan fan.
Somebody call my mama, because the Funkasaurus finally has something to do. Teaming with Santino Marella puts Brodus Clay in an actual wrestling storyline, one that has some serious comedic potential. I, for one, am happy to see Brodus involved with matches that include real pros. I mean, wrestling with Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger, you know, they can make them look good, seem like legitimate matches. Working with Santino will keep him fresh, make him kind of funny, even maybe stretching his character a bit rather than just coming out and doing the disco dancing. I'm happy to see Brodus Clay doing something other than five-second squash matches. Jamie, does he have a long career in WWE, or do you think, you know, that by next year WrestleMania at this time, we won't even have him on the show?
Well, you know, is that all Brodus Clay really is, though? Is he just there for comedy? Because I think this is an opportunity to really showcase him as you know, this funk dancing successful wrestler, and I hope that's where they're going with this. You know, his gimmick is unique, to say the least, and has been very popular with the fans. I hope it leads to something more than what Santino has become.
So are you saying that putting him with Santino kind of waters him down and makes him feel a little bit too much like every other comedic character they have?
I worry about that a little bit. Hmm. I mean, they kind of did this thing a year or so ago where they had this group of, for lack of a better term, misfits. And it was, you know, Vladimir Kozlov, Santino. They even had Mark Henry kind of in this, you know, goofy sideshow. And mm-hmm. and I worry that Brodus Clay is moving that direction. Hopefully it's what you said at the beginning, which is partner him with Santino, allow him to work with Swagger and Ziggler where he can get some success with some more seasoned wrestlers that leads to a larger push for him.
I mean, Swagger is a good feud for him because he can wrestle Swagger on house shows. He can go over Swagger. Everyone's happy. No one really cares about Jack Swagger at this point. Do you like how they call him Supercuts?
Yeah.
but Jack Swagger is a good feud right now for the Funkasaurus. By the way, you know he's the only living, breathing Funkasaurus in captivity.
Yeah. I just, you know, I could see Brodus Clay turning into another, like, Festus-type character, you know, where, you know, he just kind of ends up getting forgotten about and pushed to the side. And, again, I just hope that doesn't happen. I mean, do you like Brodus Clay? Do you like this gimmick? How do you feel about it?
I like it because he stands out. This reminds me a little bit when you and I were growing up and we had the Honky Tonk Man and we had, you know, a lot of characters, right? I mean, everybody, Coco Beware with his stupid bird and a lot of characters, everyone seemed to have their own unique gimmick. So at least Brodus to me stands out. You know, unlike Ted DiBiase and Michael McGillicuddy and Husky Hair, one after another, you know, that come out and seem kind of cut from the same cloth, at least he's a little different.
Yeah, I would like to see a match between him and the African Dream Akeem. That would be an interesting matchup. Maybe we could get Slick out there dancing too. Wild card topic number one. During the post-WrestleMania Raw, fans were chanting, "Lesnar, Lesnar," even before he came out. This created an awkward moment for John Cena as he didn't want to blow the big surprise that WWE had in store. But he could obviously hear the chants. Dave, is the fact that in this day and age we have instantaneous, you know, meant-to-be surprise news good or bad for the business? I mean, it seems like big stories are getting blown, and we know about it before it actually happens. I know it's the day and age that we live in, and personally, I like to know what's going to happen. I just don't want everybody to know what's going to happen. What do you think?
It's hard, right? It's hard to keep a secret.
It really is.
Yeah. You know, and think about this, Jamie. Think about the fact they taped SmackDown on a Tuesday night, and it's broadcast on a Friday. You find out the whole show if you want.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But in cases like this where there's secret contracts being negotiated and things like that, it takes one person with a Twitter account to be able to say, hey, I saw Brock Lesnar walking around in Miami.
It's almost impossible. Yeah, it's almost impossible. And in some ways I feel bad for all the wrestling promotions because one of the beauties of professional wrestling is the element of surprise. I remember when I was a kid, you know, guys would make their debuts with WWF at the time or guys would turn on each other and – you know, whatever the case would be, or title changes, right? I mean, some of those were even recorded ahead of time.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell stories the same way today you told them back in the 80s. And I think it's been hard at times for these promotions to keep up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's possible to be shocked in today's business. I mean, what was the last shocking event in wrestling where you said, wow, I didn't see that coming? I mean, can you remember?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I was certainly shocked that Daniel Bryan lost the title in 18 seconds. That just made me pissed off. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a fair question. And part of it is that because every day I'm on sites like Lords of Pain and these other sites and OWW and checking rumors, and I mean, part of it's my own fault.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, I do the same thing. And it's okay if I know the news. I just don't want the rest of the world to know.
You're an insider.
That's right. That's right. But again, between Twitter and you know, the message boards out there and so forth, you can find out just about anything before it happens.
Well, you know, and that's one reason I do like Monday Night Raw, because it is a live show. And even though, yes, we, you know, people knew Brock was coming back, I mean, there's still some of that live element, which always makes it interesting. I want to ask you, though, something like Shimmer, which tapes 4 DVDs in one weekend, releases them incrementally over the year. I don't know how that works, because everybody after that weekend gets the results of all 4 shows. How do you get excited to buy a DVD 6 months from now that you read the results for already?
Yeah, and I wonder if for Shimmer, and I don't know the answer to this, but you know, WWE obviously has extensive storylines and so forth, as does TNA. Does Shimmer have extensive storylines, or is it more about pure wrestling in those shows?
Well, I mean, they carry through their storylines, but it's different because they do only tape twice a year, even though they try to stretch it out. It's just different. It's a whole different animal in that regard. But the results get leaked. I don't know how you can generate excitement for your DVDs when everybody already knows the winners.
Yeah, I agree.
Wild card topic number 2. This coming week, the prestigious Cauliflower Alley Club is hosting its annual reunion in Las Vegas. For those of you who've never heard of the Cauliflower Alley Club, the CAC, it is a nonprofit organization that tries to raise money to help old retired boxers, wrestlers, and actors. Established in 1965, And it's really an amazing organization. And, you know, you think back to the movie The Wrestler and how that character was down and out. Well, you know, that's not too far from reality in some cases. And some wrestlers really need help. This is an organization aimed at raising money and also, you know, I should say this, not only just raising money for retired wrestlers, but also helping to promote and encourage up-and-coming wrestlers. Check out the website, CauliflowerAlleyClub.org. All the information's there. It's a really good organization, a really good cause. This year, some great honorees, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Wendy Richter, Bill DeMott, Ivory, Judy Martin. Every year it's like this. They have a great list of wrestlers that come back, accept awards, and give speeches. And it's really something, as we're all wrestling fans, that we should be aware of. Jamie, have you yourself ever checked out the website or heard much about the CAC?
Yes, I've been to the website, obviously. I've heard about it through your involvement. It is sad. There are some sad stories out there, and you referenced the movie The Wrestler, and if our listeners have seen that movie, you know, there's real-life stories out there very similar to The Wrestler. My question, Dave, is what does the WWE and TNA and other promotions do to help, you know, retired wrestlers, or you mentioned boxers? I get a sense that there's very little help given in the way of pensions or medical coverage, things like that.
Well, I think WWE recently, right, is paying for rehab.
Correct.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I think this has changed in the last 5 years or so where they are doing some things to help. But in general, all these performers are independent contractors, right, where, you know, they get let go. I mean, John Morrison let go from WWE, and, hey, he's got to work for independent promotions, and, you know, he's not getting a pension from WWE at this point. What the WWE can do for the CAC is bring awareness because it's such a big organization. So the last couple of years, Jim Ross, for example, has appeared at the CAC. And you know, Ted DiBiase and that kind of star power definitely helps bring in the casual fan, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm actually surprised that WWE hasn't done something similar to this, if nothing else, just for their own recognition and to say, look at what we do for retired wrestlers. Dave, is there a way for listeners to get involved with CAC, including maybe making a donation or something like that?
Yeah, then go to the CauliflowerAlleyClub.org website. You can always donate through there. And you know, one thing to point out, too, is that the reunion's every year in April, but it is a 12-month organization, a 12-month fundraising effort. So go check that out if you can. And if you're in the Nevada area or, you know, that's something of interest to you, check out the reunion. I highly encourage you. In fact, this coming week, Jamie, they have a live wrestling show. Stars like Disco Inferno, Gangrel.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, Kazarni, Stacy the Cat.
Wow.
Carter, yeah. So, you know, there's some folks that are going to be on there that people have heard of. It's basically a free wrestling show for anyone out there. Again, all bringing awareness because we really don't want to lose sight of the fact that these performers are putting their bodies on the line for our entertainment.
Dave, is Alex Wright going to be with the Disco Inferno?
Only if we're lucky.
Dave, I have another back by popular demand, a blast from the past, and I'm going to roll back the clock to November 24th, 1988. It was the second annual WWF Survivor Series, and it took place at the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio. By the way, the seating capacity was 20,000, which was 10,000 more than the show this week for TNA. But, on a side note, it marked the last time that the British Bulldogs appeared together in action. Tom Billington, the Dynamite Kid, had arguably the most talent of anyone in the arena that night. At least he did it one time. Dave, what are your memories of the British Bulldogs, and maybe more specifically, the Dynamite Kid?
Well, my memories are a lot different than the reality.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude was screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of issues with drugs, a lot of issues with steroids, huge alcoholic, and that would have been hard for me to handle at that age, because at that age, I was so into the tag team scene. I loved the Hart Foundation. You and I mean, we loved the old tag teams. And
absolutely.
I couldn't have handled the fact that the Hearts and the Bulldogs all knew each other. They were good friends. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know they came from the Stampede territory and that, you know, they were so intimate with each other, you know, related to each other, married to family members. So it's crazy to read about that later.
Yeah. Bret Hart does a really good job in his book.
He does.
Talking about this. And boy, I'll tell you, the way Hart lays it out, I mean, Tom Billington was a superstar.
Yep.
I mean, he was amazing. And Hart just raves about him in his book. I don't think we ever got to see how good Billington actually was. He must have been a fantastic technician, though.
Well, we didn't get to see it in the WWE as much, but if you were a fan of Stampede, you did see it, or a fan of Japan. He went to Japan and did a lot of great work there. By the time he got to WWE, his body was breaking down, and he was so far into the steroid cycle and his own demons that his performance really suffered. By the way, you know, the night you're talking about, that Survivor Series on November 24th, '88, did you hear the story how they booked the Rougeaus to lose early?
Right.
To get them out of the arena because the Bulldogs and the Rougeaus had legit heat behind the scenes.
Yeah, didn't somebody get their tooth punched out?
That was later on. That was not that night, but apparently Tom came into the cafeteria and the Mountie punched him out.
Oh, goodness.
Reminds me of our high school days, huh?
Yeah, I'm glad you're not here. I might punch you out right now. Well, Dave, I'm gonna rant on something a little bit here.
We're not gonna wrap the show?
No. I've got to get something off my chest. Dave, as you know, last weekend the Masters wrapped up, and Tiger Woods was nowhere near the top of the leaderboard. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of people question whether Tiger is truly needed in the PGA to make the sport popular. And let me answer this very, very clearly. Yes, he is needed. Whether you love him or hate him, it is always intriguing to see how he'll play, and if he's playing bad, whether or not he'll make an ass out of himself, as he did last weekend. He has become the Yankees of golf. This is great for the sport. Tiger Woods adds relevancy to professional golf. And at the end of the day, that is just what the PGA needs, relevancy.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, and I'd like to wrap the show, but I got to get something off my chest, too. Is that okay?
Oh, please, please.
The Masters, you know, you're talking about Tiger didn't win, but it was tremendous theater, and it just kicked off a tremendous time of year. This is a great time of year for sports. My goodness, we have the NBA playoffs starting soon. The NHL playoffs just started, although we don't need to talk about Game 1 of the Penguin series.
Do please.
We? Ugh. But between the NBA, the NHL, baseball starting, the NFL draft, which, let's face it, is a 24/7, 365, boots-to-asses kind of thing.
I mean, and that is now trending, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the NFL is really a year-round thing, and the draft is fascinating. And the Masters was every bit a big part of that. A really exciting event. Also, of course, we have WrestleMania, and we have lockdown, and all this other stuff going on. It's just a really, really fun time to be a sports fan. The one thing that's a shame, though, is that boxing and horse racing, two sports that in the 50s and 60s, and really even into the 70s, were tremendous sports, big parts of the national conscience, have really fallen off the map because, you know, we have the Kentucky Derby coming up. You know, usually around the May-June time frame, some big boxing title fights would have been signed. And it's a shame that those sports aren't as popular as they used to be because otherwise, oh my goodness, it would just be sublime. As it stands now, it's still a great time of year to be a sports fan. And so we had a great Masters, playoffs kicking off in the NBA and NHL, and I can't wait to watch every game.
Great times.
Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you are there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM, that's OWWCOM, to get all program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Radio Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David.
And I am Jamie.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well, that's okay.